Welcome to Green and Red, scrappy politics for scrappy people, a regular podcast on radical, environmental and anti-capitalist politics, brought to you by Bob Bazanko and Scott Parkin.
Welcome to the silky smooth sounds of the Green and Red podcast. I'm your co-host, Scott Parkin, in Berkeley, California. And as always, I am joined by...
Bob Bazanko, Houston, Texas.
And today, we're going to do a little bit... We're going to do one of our deep dives into this notion, I guess you could say, of the SLAP suit, which is an acronym that stands for Strategic Lawsuits Against Public Participation. And they're... SLAP suits are actually a little bit more in the media right now. There's actually a pretty notable SLAP suit going on in North Dakota right now, where oil giant Energy Transfer has been suing Greenpeace for something like 7 or 8 years now, and that actually it's gone to trial in a North Dakota court. But we're going to be talking a little bit just about the background and the history of SLAP suits, because it's actually something that's been around for a while. And so talking with us today is Evan Miscagny, who is the policy director of the Public Participation Project, which is a nonprofit dedicated to combating SLAP suits through state and federal anti-SLAP legislation. Evan is a former attorney turned documentary filmmaker and First Amendment rights advocate. And so Evan is committed to defending the free speech rights of filmmakers, journalists, and activists nationwide. Evan, welcome to the Green and Red podcast.
Thank you for having me. Excited to be here.
Yeah. And so maybe you could actually just start off, tell us a little bit, what are SLAP suits?
Yeah. So as you mentioned, SLAP stands for Strategic Lawsuit Against Public Participation. And basically what it is, in its most simplest form, is it's a frivolous or meritless lawsuit that's brought to chill the First Amendment, free speech rights, or petition activity of a person. And I think, you know, one of the things that's important to note about SLAPs is, like, SLAP filers don't go to court to seek justice, right? The point of a SLAP suit is to silence, harass, or intimidate a critic. It's a classic, you know, David versus Goliath battle. Usually on one side, you have someone really wealthy or extremely powerful or a corporation. And on the other side, you have the little guy, right? That's like your most classic SLAP. And, you know, the point of the SLAP is just to get them, you know, clogged down in our court system, drain them financially, you know, mentally as well, and just get them to the point where you silence them into submission and they'll take down the bad thing they said online or retract the statement. But the big important thing to note about SLAPs is, yeah, they're not legit lawsuits, right? They were filed not with good intentions, but just to harass or silence someone.
And when did we first start seeing SLAP suits sort of be used against advocates or advocates, journalists, et cetera?
Yeah. So, I mean, the term SLAP was actually coined in the 1980s by Professor Pring and Kanon, two professors in Colorado, and they wrote a book. I think it's called Slaps Getting Sued for Speaking Out. It's been a while since I've read it. But and it started before the era of online speech and Twitter and, you know, user-generated reviews like Yelp, where we see a lot of slaps filed today. It was community activists, organizers going to town hall meetings, speaking out against the development in their community, and then getting hit with a lawsuit for this type of activity, protest activity, petition activity, things that were clearly protected by the First Amendment. But we saw a lot of people getting sued for exercising those First Amendment rights. And, that was back in the 80s and 90s. And of course, it's evolved as free speech has evolved in this country. And a lot of the slaps we see today are in the online sphere. So, you know, like I mentioned, user-generated content review sites like Yelp, TripAdvisor, Google, Twitter, X, people speaking out online and then getting sued for that online speech.
When the first time I heard of these, which was quite some time ago, my first response reaction was like, oh, that's insane. That'll never fly. And, you know, they're going to have to move away from that. That's, even for America, that's too far out there, right? Like, how did it catch on? Like, was it just a matter of, like, right wingers using their influence and power to pretend this is like a legitimate legal doctrine? Or
yeah, you know, when I talk to a lot of people, especially non-lawyers, it's like, wait, people can sue you for
Yeah.
speaking out. And I'm like, well, actually, you can sue anybody for anything. I could get off this
Yeah.
podcast and file a lawsuit against YouTube, make up whatever cause of action I wanted. It doesn't
Trying to get at our
mean
Soros money, huh?
that's right, exactly. And I think it's important to note it's not necessarily a left-right issue, right? Because you see states like California, which has had one of the strongest, best anti-SLAPP laws on the books for over 20 years. My mentor and the former founder, the founder of the California Anti-SLAPP Project and also the founder of the Public Participation Project, Mark Goldowitz, fought early on to get that enacted a long time ago. And then, since then we've seen so many states enact across the country. More than half of them have them now. And you see red states like Texas have strong anti-SLAPP laws and other states. So I think it's one of the few areas where we see bipartisan support, where it's more of a, powerful versus the not powerful situation, right? It's that David versus Goliath that I was talking about. And that happens on both sides, right? I've seen slaps filed by climate scientists who didn't like some right-wing blogger who said something about them online, right? But clearly it was protected opinion. So, I mean, we see them both ways, but to your point, yeah, I mean, it's traditionally powerful interests, big corporations, people who don't like being criticized, bullies, legal bullies, that's what they are. They're bullies.
And what is some of the effects of a slap suit that you've seen on the little guy, on the people who they've who some of these bigger moneyed interests have targeted? Like
Yeah, I
you
mean,
kind of said it a little bit at the beginning, but like kind of go a little bit more deep on that.
we're kind of in a tough spot because oftentimes people reach out to us all the time. They're in a state that doesn't have an anti-slap law, for example, and they said something about their dentist on Yelp, right? And that dentist hit them with a threat letter. They're going to sue them. And I kind of have to be real with these people that sometimes, you don't have the anti-slap protections that are afforded to people in other states. And it's hard to find a lawyer who's going to defend against these types of lawsuits without some sort of incentive, which is why, and we can get into this in a bit, but we advocate for anti-SLAPP legislation, right? So states, there are some states that have enacted protection against these type of lawsuits, which allow you to find a lawyer on a contingency fee basis who will recover their attorney's fees from the plaintiff if they prevail. But yeah, to your point, it's mostly everyday Americans that get hit with these types of lawsuits as individuals. But the ones that make the news are the ones when, Oprah Winfrey says she's never going to eat a hamburger again on her show, and then the beef industry files a slap against her for that, right? That was one of the earliest big high-profile slaps. So we don't hear about most of the slaps that we get contacted about in the news all the time. But yeah, I'd say more and more it's people writing reviews online or things about their dentist or their doctor or their lawyer or their home contractor or their renovator. It just happens in every sphere of American life. So.
I remember the Oprah thing, and that was just laughed at. People like said that's insane, and of course, Oprah could have defended herself. She had the resources to do that, but it's crazy to go from this, the derision that met that, to the fact that today it's a very successful corporate strategy.
Yeah, and I think that's a good point because a lot of people see these high-profile slaps, like Rachel Maddow got slapped, John Oliver got slapped for something he said on his show, and they're like, "Well, they've got the resources of HBO and NBC and probably all sorts of insurance, and they don't have to worry about these lawsuits." But then what gets overlooked are the people who, get silenced for just speaking their opinion online, right? And get dragged through years of litigation, end up spending tens of thousands of dollars in legal fees because they didn't have those type of protections that people with big, large platforms do.
Or never say anything in the first place because they're afraid of this, which was a head front story in the New York Times today.
Right. I mean, look, it's very effective to send a cease and desist letter to somebody. Hey, you wrote this review. It cost us $1 million in reputational damages. Take down that review or we're going to sue you, right? And if you're like a working person with a family and the last thing you want to do is get dragged through years of litigation for some review you were trying to write just to educate and inform other consumers about a potential scam or someone who took advantage of you. So, yeah, it puts a lot of Americans in a really tough position, which is why for the past decade, I've been advocating for strong anti-SLAPP legislation at both the state and the federal level.
Speaking of that, so I know California has probably the strongest legislation on the books, is what I've heard. Texas actually has really strong SLAPP legislation. Where is any federal anti-SLAPP legislation at? I know that there's a bill being introduced to Congress or in Congress, or where's that at?
Yeah, we've had federal anti-SLAPP legislation introduced many times, and we've gotten it to the point where we've had hearings in the Judiciary Committee, and most recently, Congressman Jamie Raskin introduced the federal anti-SLAPP bill last year, and now we're working again to try and get that reintroduced this year with again bipartisan co-sponsors in both the House and the Senate. Well, of course, we want it to pass, but more importantly, we don't want this to feel like it's just one party that wants this. We want people to understand that the First Amendment sort of transcends party lines. And even though you have all these people now that claim to be First Amendment warriors, but they don't really care about the First Amendment. But there are people on both sides that really do truly value free speech and petition activity and think it's fundamental to the way our society functions. So yeah, I think the hope is that we'll have bipartisan legislation introduced in both the House and Senate this year.
Speaking of headlines, because I feel like the most notorious slapper in our country is currently in the Oval Office. He sued George Stephanopoulos, ABC. We actually just did a show on media where we talked about this quite a bit. He sued Meta, he has sued 60 Minutes,
PBS, I think, right? Or NPR or something.
PBS, plus I'm sure there's huge
Yeah.
numbers of other people that he's sued who aren't even wealthy or in the media. And I'm wondering how you can see sort of like what some of Trump's behavior translating into, like, will we see more of these frivolous lawsuits? Will we see more slap suits? Because he's kind of normalizing it in a sense. E Elon
Yeah.
too, really.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a common thread. You can look around and see. Corporations are one thing that file slaps, but when you look at individual slap filers who have a history and pattern of doing so, it's often very wealthy and powerful individuals, and they don't like when people say bad things about them. I mean, Trump has basically admitted to filing slaps, right? He filed one of the lawsuits he filed a long time ago. He said, like, I just wanted to make the guy's life hell. I want to, or something like that. Don't quote me on that because I don't want to get sued myself with a slap. But I don't want to make, I wanted to make his life miserable or something like that. But what's interesting is that Trump has also been on the winning side of slaps, right? And Stormy Daniels' case is a good example of that, where they put on, and her lawyer is now in a lot of trouble himself, but they added some causes of action, which when I read them, I was like, why are they doing that? These are slaps. They don't need to do that. Like, they have other claims they're bringing, but and Trump prevailed and won attorney's fees. And so he has been on the winning and the losing side of slaps. And again, for me, it's important, like, to not, I want this to remain a bipartisan issue, right? And I don't, when I start singling people out or targeting people, but I think there's a world where, even powerful people can understand the benefits of an anti-slap law. And there's an infamous entertainment attorney, Marty Singer, in California, and he had this great quote because, it's sort of hard to quantify how many slaps aren't filed when a state has a strong anti-slap law. And he said something like, he represents a lot of celebrities, and he used to sue, I think, the tabloids a lot, right? When they would say something. And I think he had this quote, if it weren't for California's anti-slap law, he would send, thousands of lawsuits and cease and desist to these people saying things about his clients. But because of that, he has to be more cautious and careful. And I think that's a good thing, right? When people have to be thoughtful about the lawsuits they intend to file against people, right? So it's not like you can't file a defamation suit against someone just because there's an anti-slap law. It just means your case has to have merit, and you can't just blindly sue whoever you want, whenever you want, for whatever bullshit reason,
Obviously, when we talk about slap, it's usually like the idea is David and Goliath, like you just said. But are there cases where, I mean, companies sometimes don't like each other. They say things about each other, or they say things about politicians. Does it ever apply to kind of not just activists, but other groups as well?
Yeah, I mean, I think you see journalists get slapped, you see activists get slapped, you see community organizers, and then you see the everyday American citizens getting slapped. I think we're not particularly interested in like private disputes between two private companies, but if the disagreement is in the public interest, right, then that becomes a different conversation. So, if one big, I mean, I bet in this Greenpeace case, for example, they would argue these are two powerful, or this isn't a slap. These are just two big organizations that have a disagreement about what was said, but it's like, you just kind of have to start peeling back the onion a little bit to see what's really going on sometimes with a lot of these cases.
You know, speaking of the Greenpeace case, because I mean I work in, you know, environmental advocacy, environmental organizing. I've been named in slap suits. I work with organizations that have been named in slap suits. And you know, they're very malicious and they're out to like you, it, usually in my world when a slap suit is filed, it's when they are trying to, you know, stop a campaign. They're trying to stop something that's actually being fairly disruptive to their bottom line. And do you how much is it? I mean, there's where a dentist sues a patient who gives a bad Yelp review, but like, how much is it where we see corporations really targeting, you know, people who are actually being pretty disruptive to like whatever destructive practices they're doing?
Yeah, I mean, the Greenpeace one's interesting, right? Because it started as a RICO lawsuit, which was particularly fascinating for me as a First Amendment advocate, but also as a documentary filmmaker. Because it was like, wait, is this the new corporate playbook where you file a RICO civil lawsuit? You know, a law that was down designed to bring down the mafia, you're going to use to target environmental activists. And we saw two or three major corporations in a short period of time file these RICO lawsuits, which appeared to be slaps, right? Now that one was dismissed, and now this new Greenpeace case, you know, was filed in North Dakota, which of course doesn't have an anti-slap law. Again, pushing my case for why both states and the federal government need strong anti-slap legislation, and Greenpeace is talking about that as well right now. But yeah, I mean, it's almost like a corporation might do something and have success with it, and then another corporation sees that and they're like, oh, well, should we do that? Right. And that's what kind of what it felt like with the RICO lawsuits happening, right? Because it felt like big multinational corporations were targeting environmental activists for their advocacy and doing so through RICO, which again, the racketeering law designed to bring down the mafia. It was like pretty wild to see. And then, you know, not to get too much into the weeds here, but RICO's criminal, but also, I mean, civil, but also criminal. And then you started seeing after the Black Lives Matter protests in 2020, states saying, hey, well, we're going to ban protests, right? We're going to make that a RICO offense, essentially. And it's like, yeah, it's almost like copycat games, right? To answer your question, it seems like if one powerful entity can do something, other powerful entities can do it. If they see it was successful, well, why wouldn't we try that, right? If that's going to not That's going to help our bottom line. If that's going to get these people to stop attacking us, you know, let's throw a slap lawsuit at them as well.
For a slap suit to be successful, do they actually like have to win the suit, or is it just like wrecking people's lives and intimidating them? Is that the real purpose of it, or do they actually win a fair
Yeah,
amount
I
of
don't think
cash?
they go to court to win, right? I think that's the whole point. Is a in a real slap, they don't give a shit about the outcome, right? They just want to drown you in legal fees and burden you physically, emotionally, financially, right? Just wear you down to the point where you're gonna stop, right? You're gonna give up. And I say this all the time because I'm always trying to say, you know, you can still file these lawsuits if you have if you have a merit case with merit that you want to win and succeed on. An anti-slap law doesn't have to scare you, right? You're going to get to go and have your day in court. What we're trying to do is just get those obviously frivolous and meritless lawsuits out of our court system, you know, as quickly as possible.
For your work with the Public Participation Project, do y'all I assume you are doing a certain level of education and media around this, and I'm wondering how much you are finding people are not even aware that this sort of legal doctrine of a slap suit exists. I mean,
Yeah, I mean
how
that's I'm one of those people. I went to law school in Washington, D.C., and I graduated and moved to California, and I was studying for the California bar, and I was studying for the civil procedure section, and they were like, I read about an anti-slap motion. It's like, here's a motion you can file within 30 days if you think the lawsuit filed against your client was brought attacking their First Amendment rights. And I was like, well, what the hell is this? I've never even heard of this. And you know, after I took the bar exam, I just started looking online, and it just so happened the California Anti-Slap Project was looking to hire. And I was like, wow, this is like why I went to law school, right? I wanted to do public interest law, and the type of lawsuits that CASP, California Anti-Slap Project, was handling at the time was just like right in line with my worldview. And So then I became a lawyer, sort of starting to educate other people about this issue. And that's when, after a while, I joined the Public Participation Project because I was really interested in this advocacy and educational component. Because to your point, most people, when they contact us, they're like, I didn't know I could get sued for writing a Yelp review, right? I didn't know I could get sued for doing this. And I'm like, I mean, it's hard enough for lawyers to understand SLAPs and anti-SLAP laws, but then to expect the American public to also understand these like very specific nuanced issues of the law, it's a challenge, but I think we're starting to have success, and I think we're starting to see that the evidence is that states are enacting anti-SLAPP laws. There's a bunch of state laws pending in front of state legislatures. Like, it's happening. And oftentimes, was it Naomi Klein, the shock doctrine? I don't even know if I'm referencing that correctly, but oftentimes you'll get one big slap in a state that happens somewhere locally and it makes the news, right? And then that sort of triggers the state legislature to be like, whoa, why are we allowing these type of lawsuits to happen? So it's usually anecdotal cases that make the big headlines that help us pass anti-slap laws, because that's oftentimes our educational component.
How many states have anti-slap laws on the books?
Oh my gosh, why didn't I look this up right before we joined? I think we're over half for sure. I think we're over 30 last time I checked, and I'll have to check because we've
Really?
had many introduced this year and a lot enacted last year. And the great thing about what that is the Uniform Law Commission, which sort of looks across the country at areas of where state laws like vary and shrink the breadth. What they'll do is come up with, they'll spend years researching and put together committees and put together what they call model legislation. And they put together a model anti-SLAPP bill. And it's nonpartisan, right? I mean, the ULC is made up of both parties from people all over the states. And it's really helped educate people at the state level. And we're starting to see state reps take interest in that and introduce bills. So I'm hoping
34 states have anti-slap
34.
laws.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
I
30.
would have lost all my money betting against that.
Yeah,
That's
34. Important to note that they vary in strength and breadth, right? Which is why the Uniform Law Commission state anti-slap model law is so important, because some anti-slap laws are pretty weak. They protect a very, to the point of like, there will be a case in the news and they're like, oh, we need to protect against this type of specific case, but it's not broad enough to encompass all slaps. So we have some states, and the Institute for Free Speech does a great like anti-slap scorecard that we reference on our website, where we give them like A, B, C, D, E, F, for the strength of their state anti-slap law. But that's why this Uniform Law Commission work is so important, because they have drawn on the best anti-slap laws across the country and created this model bill that has a lot of great components to it. And I can get into what makes a good anti-slap law, unless that's too in the weeds for.
I'll ask that as a follow-up question, but I actually have another question about the legislation first. Do we see groups like ALEC trying to pass anti-SLAPP legislation? Or is it such a bipartisan issue that ALEC has not really touched it?
ALEC touched it a long time ago, and honestly, it was part of when I think ALEC was trying to do like their rebrand and show that they were more like, I don't know, First Amendment friendly than, maybe trying to pull libertarians or
Libertarian,
folks
yeah.
into the group. But it was, remember when like Yelp and Facebook and TripAdvisor and a bunch of folks left ALEC? I think it was because, ALEC at the time expressed interest in supporting anti-SLAPP laws, but I think they also support like ag gag laws, right? And like anti-First Amendment bills. So there's like a level of hypocrisy that we've seen. But again, like ALEC aside, does the left have an ALEC? Is there like a no? But the Uniform Law Commission,
If
I was trying
only.
to find a reference. The ULC is really the nonpartisan version of ALEC that I think what I like about them is I was impressed by how many Republicans and Democrats they brought to the table to work through these issues.
So what are some characteristics of some strong anti-SLAPP legislation laws?
I think the most important is the attorney's fees provision, right? So basically what that says is if you think you've been sued with a slap, if you've been sued with a slap, and you can find an attorney to represent you on a contingency fee basis, right? Because that attorney knows if I can show this was a slap and prevail, I will get my attorney's fees paid for, right? So the attorney's fees provision basically says that if you prevail and show that the lawsuit filed against you as a slap, there's mandatory attorney's fees awarded to that party, right? That is so important for this protection of everyday Americans that I'm talking about, right? Like Rachel Maddow, John Oliver, Oprah, they don't need mandatory fees provision. They're going to get defended no matter what. But for an everyday American to find a lawyer to represent them, and if they don't have the financial resources to do so, the contingency fee is really what allows them to do that. I mean, and there's other important characteristics, right? It's like we like a 30-day provision. So like we want these cases dismissed as quickly as possible, right? So getting them out early, a stay of discovery, a lot of things, and then some important exemptions for public interest litigation and making sure that like certain types of lawsuits don't get caught up in anti-slap motions when actually these are the suits we were trying to protect against. So yeah, I mean, I think I would advise if people are interested, the Uniform Law Commission on their website has a great explainer of why they put in each provision and what it does. But again, I think mandatory attorney's fees are really what give this legislation teeth and make it strong. And then of course things like immediate appeal provisions, right? State courts, especially with a new anti-slap law, they get it wrong sometimes. It's new, they don't know what they're doing. So the right to have an immediate appeal and let the appellate court sort of work out some of these early kinks in an anti-slap law are important as well.
I have two more questions. Actually, one question somewhat related to this, are what are some good practical ways for individuals or groups to deal with slap cases quickly if they're living in one of those states with no legislation or weak legislation?
Yeah, I mean, oftentimes I say stick to your opinion, right? Don't make factual statements that someone could say, well, that's not true, and provide evidence, right? And always have evidence, right? So I say stick to your opinion and provide evidence. A simple example is like if you go to a restaurant and you have a horrible experience, right? Don't start making claims like, the things that you can't prove, right? Just say, oh, I didn't enjoy the food. I thought the service was terrible. The burger was $20, but they charged me $60. Like, if you're going to say that, have your credit card receipt, have the menu, right? Just like it's really common sense oftentimes, but like stick to opinion is often what I tell people. When you start making factual assertions, that's when you're going to get into sort of he said, she said scenarios. But if it's your opinion, opinion is currently protected by the First Amendment in the Constitution. So
Today,
today. That's why I said currently. So yeah, I mean, stick to your opinion and look, use resources, contact your local ACLU, look at the National Lawyers Guild lawyers referral list. The Electronic Frontier Foundation, EFF, they're amazing. I kind of call them ACLU of the online world, right? They're protecting your digital rights. So if you think you've been slapped, contact EFF. They have a network of attorneys and someone might be able to help you in your area.
There's a group called FIRE, which does a lot of academic work, but they do that kind of stuff too.
Yeah, exactly. And Fire, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but they had more like traditional libertarian right
Yeah,
leaning,
yeah.
right? And I
Although
feel like
they've been really active in defending students during these campus protests. So yeah, I thought it was kind of a conservative group when it got started, but it's actually not bad. They're doing some good stuff. Last thing is just one brief thing to follow up, but. Because you were talking about like what you can do, state your opinion. But what if you're an activist, right? And you're up against this Exxon or Energy Transfer or something like that. Is there anything like you can do to prepare for this? I mean, talk to lawyers ahead of time. I mean, if Exxon comes after you, then you're kind of screwed, right? So is there anything you can do to prepare other than just not show up and not go to it? Just like they, do
I
what they
mean,
want you to do, right?
one of my favorite groups that has emerged of this sort of fighting back against slaps movement is Protect the Protest. And it's a coalition of amazing organizations all doing amazing work. And I think they recognize that, like, strength in numbers, if we collectively organize together, we can fight back against some of these lawsuits. And yeah, I mean, so that would be my advice. If you're a group and you're about to launch a targeted campaign against someone for a specific reason, reach out to a group like Protect the Protest and tell them what you're thinking about. But yeah, of course, I always recommend talking to a lawyer before doing anything like that. I mean, look, in my personal life, I make documentary films is what I do, in addition to doing this work. And I've been threatened with a slap, sort of got a cease and desist from a powerful corporation for the first film I made. I was lucky in the sense that I was like, everything I put this film together with that lawyer background, with that anti-SLAPP background, knowing what was going on. So, I could write that response letter instantly to these to this company and say, I stand by everything I said. Everything is true. Here's my evidence to support it. And then it went away, luckily, right? But not everyone sort of, went to law school and studied anti-SLAPP law. So it's like, I think reaching out and finding support where you can, and there's some amazing organizations doing that work. But Protect the Protest, I would definitely tell, especially your listeners as well, to check out. They're an awesome group.
One slap suit that we didn't talk about was the Stephen Donziger Chevron Communities in Ecuador case, which actually I believe it was a documentary filmmaker who made a film about the case where Chevron was actually able to subpoena the some of the like the cut footage where they were actually able to get Donziger for some of what they got him for, if I'm not mistaken.
Joe Berlinger. I mean, that case for me was set such a dangerous precedent for filmmakers and journalists, right? That you would have to turn over your raw footage, right? That's like, oh, the worst nightmare. I mean, I will say it's made me incredibly more cautious when a camera is rolling, right? What I am saying, what, it's like, it's another, I feel like, intimidation tactic, right? Just to keep people on their toes and know that that's not outside the scope of what someone could get, right? It wasn't just the film. They want to know what was in the film. That case is incredibly complex. Again, it was one of these RICO lawsuits, right? So it's like, that was like, Chevron was kind of the OG of using RICO to target environmental activists. And like, that's when it looks like other corporations took note of this playbook of silencing people through RICO lawsuit. RICO's scary, right? I mean, if you get hit with a RICO lawsuit, that's not something you want to face. So, I think that they're sort of the pioneers, if you will, of using RICO as a slap tactic.
Well, you said you were, it would be great if you could get a bipartisan solution to this, but isn't kind of the attack bipartisan too? Because as I think about this, with Trump's, recent vendettas, but this is happening in Democratic states, Republican states, universities with liberal presidents, and so forth. So it's kind of broader than that, isn't it?
What do you mean in terms of
Well, it's
solution?
not just a Democratic or Republican issue. It's like the people who are coming after activists or journalists or whatever could be or from all over. They're liberal, conservative, Democratic, Republican, and everything, right?
Oh, totally. And I think
And it's a bipartisan assault as well.
it's a bipartisan assault. It's a bipart, yeah, the attackers and the attacked, right? So, and I think Europe has actually sort of been leading the front on starting to enact anti-SLAPP legislation over there. They're starting to see it as well. To your point, it's usually power and money and influence are like the driving forces behind the slap filers, right? So there's plenty of powerful people everywhere, right? And rich and powerful people, and plenty of bullies, and plenty, insecure legal bullies is what they are, right? They don't like anyone saying anything negative about them, even if it's clearly protected opinion. And they have the resources. They don't give a shit, right? They can file a lawsuit. What is it to them if they file another lawsuit, right? So,
My last question is, in your role as a documentary filmmaker, is there anything that you'd like to tell us about? Is there anything of note, any of your films or anything, any particularly if it's related to any of this?
yeah, I mean, the I keep coming back to RICO because I think for me it's such an interesting hook into slaps, this idea of using the racketeering law designed to bring down the mob to attack this to attack environmental activists, right? And so I'm in early phases of development with some amazing people about doing a documentary that sort of explores this phenomenon and RICO and looking at slaps more generally. But I'm most of my films sort of lean toward that type of lawfare, if you will, right? My first film. I'm attracted to whether or not it's criminal or civil, some sort of legal justice topics that I'm interested in.
Excellent. And we can put whatever link you want in the show
Oh,
notes
thank
too.
you. Yeah. Yeah, thanks. Appreciate that. Yeah.
That was my last question. I don't know if Bob has any others.
No, I'm good. Thanks so much for talking to us.
Yeah, and thanks for all of your work, actually, with the public participation project. It's imp very important work that more people need to know about.
Yeah, you all as well. And folks can reach out to me. They can go to our website. It's anti-slap.org, and they can contact us there if they want to get more information or learn more about anything we talked about. I'm happy to chat with folks.
Folks, we've been talking with Evan Mascagni, who is the policy director of the Public Participation Project, which is dedicated to fighting strategic lawsuits against public participation or SLAPP suits. If you like what you're hearing, check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. If you're watching this on YouTube, hit the subscribe button. If you're listening to this on an audio platform, give us a rate and review. And if you really like us, go to greenandredpodcast.org and hit the support button, or become a patron at patreon.com/greenandredpodcast. Evan, much appreciation for you being here. Everyone else out there, make trouble, misbehave, and we'll talk to you again. Thanks.
She was with the Russians too. Huh. I was gambling in Havana. Yeah, I took a little.